Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
D-Mace, Vingit, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingit and Derek Mason live at Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena. Willie Donick will join us momentarily. He and the rest of the FanDuel Sports Network crew are preparing for tonight's Predators game against the Los Angeles Kings. Puck drop at 7. Pre-game starting at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Derek, it was a winning weekend, not just for the local professional football team. The local professional hockey team also won this weekend. The Predators won 5-2 against the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday.
Boom.
Vanderbilt won at Auburn.
Boom, boom.
Bowl eligible for the first time, I want to say, since 2018. I hope that I have that correct. But
congrats.
Vanderbilt, a 17-7 winner at Auburn. And for those Vol fans who live around here, too, you won as well. Tennessee wins 28-18 at home against Kentucky. So Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean, who reports on the Nashville Predators, had a great stat about this on his Twitter. I'm going to find it right now so that I give him proper credit. He said this is the first time since the weekend of November 23rd and 24th of 2019 that the Predators, Titans, Volunteers, and Commodores all won on the same weekend.
Oh, congrats to the state teams. Not necessarily like Tennessee State meaning state, but, man, Tennessee State almost had themselves a win, too, and they couldn't score at the end. But be it may. You got four victories from the, you know, two major teams here, pro teams in the Preds and the Titans. And then you had the Volunteers, hold on to their win against Kentucky. And then, hey, listen, Cinderella is still going because the Vanderbilt Commodores, I'm not sure when will we look at Vandy and say, okay, they're not the old Vandy anymore, because even the line suggested after everything that we've seen or everything that the public has seen about the Vanderbilt Commodores showed you that they are a much different team, but yet and still they were a, what, 6 or 7 point dog against Auburn?
They were a touchdown underdog against Auburn. It did seem peculiar,
yeah,
considering that Vanderbilt has been playing well. Auburn has struggled this season. Oh, by the way, Diego Pavia officially owns Hugh Freeze at this point.
And he will own him forever.
3-0.
Because they will never play. He will never play Hugh Freeze again.
New Mexico State beat Liberty when Hugh Freeze was there. New Mexico State beat Auburn, and now Vanderbilt has defeated Auburn. So
who's
Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia 3-0 against Hugh Freeze. I wonder if any little children down in Alabama went trick-or-treating to Hugh Freeze's house dressed as Diego Pavia. I'm sure it might have given him the heebie-jeebies, but Hugh Freeze doesn't have to see Diego Pavia again, but he officially owns Hugh Freeze. I did, to your point, Derek, I did see this funny tweet from David Ubben, who reports on college football for The Athletic. He said this yesterday, quote, Vandy gets a tough run in the court of public opinion, but the flip side of that is it does have to feel good to send every team you beat into an existential crisis, even if you're just a solid team and tough out. Because
yes.
People just continue to perceive Vanderbilt as the kid brother
exactly.
of the SEC. And look, it's been a rough go for Vanderbilt now for many years, although if I'm not mistaken, Vanderbilt now has as many top five AP wins as James Franklin does at Penn State.
Yeah, you're right about that.
After Penn State lost to Ohio State, and then he was cursing at a fan, or a fan was cursing at him, who knows. But to your point, I think the outside perspective of college football fans is askew. Because they are used to seeing Vanderbilt just get their butts kicked year after year, at least in recent years. But to be bowl eligible, We'll talk to Clark Lee tomorrow at 1:30. Looking forward to that conversation. But it has to feel great for Clark Lee and his program. I know they have bigger goals in mind, higher aspirations. But considering it has been, there have been some lean years. Clark Lee inherited a program that was, you know, in disarray.
Yes.
And now, you know, with the help of the New Mexico State clan led by Diego Pavia, you know, Vanderbilt's going bowling, and that's great to see.
It is. So congratulations to not just Clark Lee, but his coaching staff, the players, most definitely, first and foremost, the players. Candace Lee, congratulations to her. You know, Lemansky Hall, who's a friend of mine who I played with, who works over there now. Congratulations to him. And again, thank him for allowing, you know, for inviting me over last week, not this, you know, well, the week before they played Texas. And then, you know, Coach Lee, you know, also allowing me to come to his practice. So, but in what world would you have thought that we would be discussing first and foremost Vanderbilt before we discuss these, you know, professional sport team here in the Tennessee Titans? Boy, oh boy, has the Tennessee Titans fallen. They've fallen tremendously. When you start, when we lead the show with, and Clark Lee deserves every accolade, and his program deserves every accolade.
Let's give Clark Lee his flowers.
Exactly. Absolutely. But we would have never thought this at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely
even last
not.
Year, that we would spend this much time, especially on a Monday, discussing Vanderbilt before we start discussing the Tennessee Titans. That shows me two things, that the Vanderbilt program, first and foremost, has made a lot of strides, not just a few, but a lot of strides. And they are a legit team, a team that you go in every week. And they don't just have a chance to win. They make sort of their own sort of luck in a sense. They go out there and they play hard and they play physical, and the game's never over when Vanderbilt's on the field. As opposed to the Tennessee Titans, it seems like other than this game, even this game, they almost gave it away. But they haven't been able to make their own luck throughout the whole season. So my time on the radio, I mean, I would have never thought that we would be discussing, you know, Vanderbilt football at this length over, you know, a Tennessee Titan, you know, Sunday game.
Yes, it's just a strange new world that we are discussing Vanderbilt becoming bowl eligible, period.
Exactly.
But also Vanderbilt winning on a Monday after a Titans win. By the way, here is the stat that Joe Rexrode tweeted into my timeline yesterday. Vanderbilt has as many wins over top five opponents since 2000 as Penn State.
Oh,
one
wow.
each. So I believe, I want to say James Franklin is now 1-13 against AP top five teams. I believe since at Penn State only.
What
I want
team
to say,
did they beat?
I don't know.
Was it Ohio State one year? It might have been Ohio State.
It may have been Ohio State. I'll have to check that. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, Derek, let's not bury the lead.
Yes.
The Tennessee Titans have won a football game. They tried their darndest to lose that football game.
Yes.
But they did end up on top, defeating the New England Patriots 20-17 in overtime. And at one point yesterday, we have a show group chat. It includes you and me and Willie and David James, our producer. And that was a tough watch yesterday.
Yes,
it was not the beautiful game.
No.
It certainly was not. And I texted all of you at one point and said, I thought the Eighth Amendment was supposed to protect us against cruel and unusual punishment. But that's what it felt like watching most of that game. I actually got a kick out of this tweet from Bill Simmons, who is a noted Patriots fan. He tweeted at one point, quote, need a power outage in Nashville so we don't have to watch this Titans-Pats game anymore. Can Michael Myers throw someone into the power grid? it was bowling shoe ugly, to use the hackneyed term. It was bowling shoe ugly, but the Titans come out on top. Though, as I said, they tried their darndest to blow that game, especially on the last play of regulation where Drake May was scrambling and scrambling and scrambling. There was no time on the clock, and he found Ramondre Stevenson for a touchdown, a five-yard touchdown to force overtime. Drake May held the ball for 11.82 seconds before throwing that touchdown. The only touchdown pass where the quarterback held the ball longer in the next-gen stats era, which is since 2016, was Jaden Daniels' Hail Mary last week.
Oh, wow.
So Drake May had the ball for basically 12 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't know how many pass rushers he evaded. Two, three.
It was only three. I think at the most it was three guys that were rushing the passer.
But he was making May magic happen.
Yes.
And, you know, the Titans, to their credit, you know, the issue with the Titans this season, and Brian Callahan touched on this after the game, and we'll play some of his comments throughout the show. Clearly, very emotional, Brian Callahan, after the game yesterday. You could tell that the losing was weighing on him, and we'll play some of that audio here in a bit. But as Brian Callahan said after the game, the issue with the Titans this season, among many things, has been they have handed their opponent games.
Yes.
They've turned over the ball too many times, unforced errors. But Drake May throws that touchdown pass. By the way, the Patriots kicker's extra point barely made it in. the closest it could have come to going in. It felt like it kissed off of the inside of the upright. It was that close. But they forced overtime, and it felt like, oh, boy, here we go again. The Titans couldn't get a big stop when it mattered. New England forced overtime, and they're just going to win this game. When Drake May threw that touchdown pass, I just started laughing because I just didn't know how else to react. I was like, you got to be kidding me. That, you know, it just felt like, how can the Titans outdo themselves this time? Drake May said, hold my beer, watch this, as I run around for 12 seconds before throwing a touchdown pass with no time left on the clock. But to the Titans' credit, they took the ball first in overtime, a methodical drive down the field, got a field goal, and Drake May made a rookie mistake, threw a ball that he probably shouldn't have thrown.
No.
Amani Hooker was there to intercept it for a second interception of the day. And that's all she wrote. But, you know, Drake May, by the way, that kid has a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a Patriots fan, I think you can feel good knowing that it appears that you do have your young quarterback versus the Titans. And we'll talk about Will Levis as well, because we all expected him to play.
Yes.
And he did not. And we'll get into that as well. But, you know, kudos to the Titans for winning a game. Because, look, they struggle to win a game against a team that's just as bad as they are. A bare minimum is just as bad as they are. They could be slightly worse, but bare minimum, the Patriots are just as bad as the Titans.
Yeah.
But they needed the win for themselves, and they got it. So let's give them kudos for that.
Yeah, hand claps all around, finger snaps all around for the Tennessee Titans, who eked out a victory yesterday against the New England Patriots. Now, both teams are bad.
This isn't your father's New England Patriots or your older brother's New England Patriots.
No, this is far from that. Both teams are bad.
Yes, they are.
But one team just ended up being worse than the other yesterday. And the Titans, they tried to give away the game.
I say the Titans were slightly less bad yesterday than better. They were slightly less bad.
They tried to give the game away. They had other opportunities, the Titans, before the last ditch effort by Drake May. Brownlee had the ball in his hands on a bad pass, an interception-worthy throw by Drake May. He has it right in his hands, but he doesn't come up with the interception, which would have sealed the game. It would have been over. I think that might have been the series right before Drake May threw the Hail Mary. I can't call it a Hail Mary, but it kind of sort of was a, let me just throw it up in a vicinity where I think my player is going to be.
Right.
And hopefully he can get it. If he doesn't, I mean, it's fourth down. I got to do it anyway. But they came up with a play. So the Titans had their opportunity. That was a very difficult game to watch.
You're telling me.
From start to finish. You truly saw how inept the Tennessee Titans are on offense, not necessarily defense, because I think their defense did, you know, show up majority of the game. I don't put so much fault on them for that last play, because that's probably you're holding your breath in situations like
that. What do you do in that situation?
It's just because you're only either you're gonna rush more than three, which then you will leave yourself exposed in the back end, or you're gonna rush three and just hope that possibly maybe one of those guys get to the quarterback and affect him in a way that he has to heave it up or throw it out of bounds, or you get the sack. And what happened was, listen, the Titans defenders, they plastered, which means once he's running around in the backfield, just pick up a man and stick with them. If you can push him out of bounds, push him out of bounds, because once he gets outside the pocket, you can sort of kind of, you know, jostle with the guys a little bit. Because he's broken the pocket and you don't know if he's going to run or pass. That's an advantage for the defense, as long as you just don't pull him down. But if you're sitting there, you know, being combative with him because he's being combative with you, that's okay. But that's a play that defensive players just they don't like, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, especially if you give a guy 11 seconds to, you know, run around there and find someone, because as he's running around, you're getting tired because you're trying to plaster the guys that you're covering. And typically your back is to the ball. So they see the ball and you don't. So those are some of the scariest plays in the National Football League as far as the predictability. You don't know what's going to happen. I think they did all they could do. But Drake May just threw up a hope and a prayer, and his guy came down with it. Sort of like, you know, what Joe Flacco did, you know, a few weeks prior when the Titans went with all out blitz. He just threw it up to a spot, and he expected his guy to go get it, and his guy made a play. So it came back to bite them once again. But what I do like is that even though they were playing without their center, and that almost was a disaster, playing with Levine at center. I'm not saying Levine's bad, but when you have to be thrown in there without any, you know, warm-ups or anything else, and you're thrown in a position where you are in control of the ball every play, you had a ball in your hand, things can happen. There were a few high snaps that, frankly, could have been the difference between the Titans winning and losing a game, because there were two that if Mason Rudolph doesn't react quicker, that ball's over his head, and it's either a huge loss or you know, the New England Patriots are picking it up, especially the one in, I think it was in overtime, where it was a high snap, or it was either in overtime. Yeah, it was in overtime. The high snap, that if it goes over his head, that game's over with. New England gets the ball. But they dropped, they you know, went into sort of this 4-minute offense. They stuck to what had gotten them the lead in the first place, and that was running Tony Pollard. They ran Tony Pollard, the offensive line, they set the tempo, they pushed their defensive line back, and you can just start to see the momentum in overtime sort of switch to the Titans. And, you know, I think if Cushenberry's there, they go in and score. But it was another bad snap. And luckily, they didn't, you know, lose the ball on that one.
Right.
You know, Mason Rudolph was able to get the ball back. And after that, they were able to kick a field goal. But the defense held up once again. And Amani Hooker, congratulations to him on his 2-interception day. And he was just making plays all around the board. But even in the win, the Titans lose. They can't help but lose in every scenario. Why? And this has nothing to do with draft stock, because I don't care about that stuff. They are down now 2 more starters.
Yes.
Cushenberry's gone for the season.
Right. The report is that he has suffered an Achilles injury and that his season is over.
Uh-huh.
And to your point about the offensive line afterwards, you know, Corey Levin was elevated from the practice squad.
Exactly.
He had to go in at center. Normally, Daniel Brunskill would have done so, but he was playing guard.
Yes.
Because Dylan Radins was unavailable. So it was a lot of mixing and matching. So ideally, when Radins is in there, Brunskill will play at center.
Exactly.
In place of Cushenberry. But that is a big loss for the Titans.
Exactly. And then Then you have your, you know, you have Diggs go down.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know if he's going to just be out a few games. Is he going to just miss a few practices? Or if he's done for a majority of the season. They haven't gotten a – there hasn't been a prognosis on him.
I have not seen an update on that
how
yet.
Much time he will miss. Now, he ended up missing the rest of the game. He didn't come back in. They took him in a locker. So, locker room. So, even when the Titans win, they end up losing. Because now – you've taken an offensive line that hadn't been that good, and they may end up being worse now that Cushenberry is no longer your center. So even when the Titans win, they lose.
Speaking of injury updates, we have this from our friend Teron Davenport, who will join our program at 1 o'clock. Brian Callahan said Lloyd Cushenberry and Quandre Diggs will both be out for significant time and headed to injured reserve. So it's been reported that Lloyd Cushenberry suffered an Achilles injury that will keep him out for the rest of the season. No telling on Quandre Diggs in terms of how long he'll be out, but according to Brian Callahan, Diggs and Cushenberry will both be out for significant time and are headed to injured reserve. So we'll get into that as well. Brian Callahan also said, according to Teron, that the plan is for Will Levis to be the starter when healthy. Callahan said he's hopeful that this is the week that Levis is back, but the Titans still have to see how he feels this week. So we shall see if Will Levis is back under center for the Tennessee Titans this week. I believe we actually do have an injury update on Quandre Diggs from Tom Pelissero. Titans veteran safety Quandre Diggs has suffered a season-ending Liz Frank injury that will require surgery. So, Quandre Diggs, a season-ending Liz Frank injury that will require surgery. So, he is done, and Lloyd Cushenberry is done.
So, even when they win, they lose.
Right. So, two of the Titans' free agent acquisitions this offseason will no longer be able to play this season because of injury. Quandre Diggs out with a season-ending Liz Frank injury, according to Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero. And it's been reported in multiple places that Lloyd Cushenberry suffered an Achilles injury. His season is also over. So the Titans, this is Derek, and we'll get
this
into this.
This is the fourth guy that has gone down that they went and got in free agency this offseason. Chidobe has been gone the whole season, basically since training camp. Snead is down.
Yep.
Now you got Cushenberry gone for the season. And Diggs gone for the season.
And if you want to throw in Jamal Adams, that was a league minimum deal, but didn't work out here. So a lot of the Titans' free agents that they signed this offseason are either currently unavailable or will be unavailable for the rest of this season. But we will continue to discuss the Titans' win against the Patriots and more. 615-737-1025. What are your thoughts on the Titans' win? I'm sure some of you are happy. I'm sure some of you are sad. I'm sure some of you are angry. I saw plenty of tweets about draft order after yesterday's game. Jared. But we will discuss all of that today. And I just want to tell you first to tune into 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt men's basketball. Yes, college basketball season is here. I am excited. The Commodores take on Maryland Eastern Shore at Memorial Gym. Tip-off is at 7 with the pregame beginning at 6:30. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com.
It's time to start.
Ready, go.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you live at Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will host the Los Angeles Kings tonight at 7 o'clock. We will bring you Brian Callahan's news conference. It's currently going on. We will replay it for you at noon. But the news of the day so far, both Lloyd Cushenberry and Quandre Diggs will be out for the season. It's been reported that Lloyd Cushenberry has an Achilles injury, and it is a Liz Frank injury for Quandre Diggs that will require surgery. So Quandre Diggs and Lloyd Cushenberry, it has been reported, will be out for the remainder of the season. They join Chidobe Awuzie and Legarius Sneed on the injured list. The Titans are hopeful to have Will Levis back starting at quarterback this week, but we will see as the week progresses. But Derek, one thing that you have talked about a lot is that this team's depth has not been up to snuff. And now that you're down your starting center and a top defensive back, you're missing multiple top defensive backs. This is where we're going to see if the Titans have players on their roster in depth roles that can step up and be important parts of this team's future moving forward.
I would be surprised if this team wins another game, honestly. And it's not because I want them to lose every game, or it's not because, you know, I don't think that they can go out there and win one. It's just that, you know, they're depleted. This game is about the Jimmys and Joes. It's about the war of attrition. Who can stay the healthiest the longest, especially when you're talking your marquee players? And the Tennessee Titans, from the jump, have been losing guys. And now, to add insult to injury, you lose your number one center, you know, and you lose your number one safety. With a team that has been trying to hold on and trying not to go as deep in their roster as they need to, because they understand that past the starters, this team isn't good. Now you have to rely on guys that don't have much experience, or frankly shouldn't be, you know, playing at this juncture. Not heavy minutes anyway. So again, they're going to reshuffle the offensive line, because I guarantee you, more than likely, Brunskill will get moved once Raidens come back. Raidens will go back at guard. Brunskill will be moved to center. So now you got to work that tandem out, the center and the quarterback, the center and the two guards on both sides. Now I got to build a rapport with these guys. Now I got to get, you know, used to making calls and everything else. So this team is pretty much holding on but with duct tape and thread right now. They can't afford anyone else to go down. This is not a good team as we sit. And if other people continue to, if other players continue to go down, I'm not sure how they're going to pick up a victory moving forward. And maybe there are some Titan fans out there that are saying good.
I was about to say, yeah, I'm sure there are some Titans fans out there that are not upset with this news, considering they were upset with the fact that the Titans' draft position took a tumble after winning yesterday by beating the Patriots. The Patriots moved down the list. New Orleans, and we'll talk about the Saints and all of that in a little bit. The Saints lost. They moved down. You know, the Titans, according to Tankathon.com, which is just a great name for a website, by the way, Tankathon.com, they are ninth in the draft order currently, and I believe they were sitting at second before Sunday's action. So I'm sure there are Titans fans that are happy about this turn of events. And we have a couple of texts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com as we welcome in Willie Donick to the show.
Willie.
We have a couple of texts to the effect of, did the AI cancer model from Chad Brinker predict these injuries? I mean, Chad, look, you can quibble with the free agent signings if you would like. Exactly. I will not stop you from that. But, I mean, do you think that they could have planned for Lloyd Cushenberry to tear his Achilles? I know that L'Jarius Sneed had issues with his knees. He played basically every snap for the Chiefs last year despite, you know, some knee issues. This is a quad injury for L'Jarius Sneed. So I'm sure that injury risk is something that general managers and front office executives, they factor in to all of this stuff, but nobody could have predicted that, you know, Lloyd Cushenberry was at a risk of tearing his Achilles when they signed him to a contract in free agency. So if you want to be upset with the free agent signings in general, go right ahead.
Yeah, but this cancer model, I think people sometimes take things too literal. He was, you know, discussing, hey, listen, the model we use for cancer curing and everything else, that same model can be used to predict the probability of a guy, you know, getting injured, especially during 2-a-days, and how do we sort of scale things back so the risk of him getting injured, the percentages go down. He's not saying that this is a foil-proof sort of model and no one's going to get injured. It's not a foil-proof model in the cancer world. So what makes you think it's going to be a foil-proof model here. It's just a predictor of, you know, what may or may happen. Now, look, we can say, if y'all want to point to and say, well, did the cancer model help? Well, I would tend to say, yeah, because wasn't the Titans over the last 2 years prior to this season the most injured team in the National Football League?
It was one of those things that they cited when they made the change.
Absolutely. So, obviously, some has changed because they're no longer one of those top teams. Now,
well, they put artificial turf on the stadium because they thought it would decrease injuries, and they made a big to-do about that. Mm-hmm. Even though they were going into a new stadium, it would have been easy just to say, let's just ride it out until there's a new stadium. But they said this might help us
cut down the
data that they had said, even though it counteracts what the general, generally people think that you're more apt to get injured on turf,
exactly.
Right? That's a general accepted practice around football is turf's great, the rain, everything, it handles the elements. You're not going to play on mud, but it does increase injuries. We've known that for 50 years, but the Titans were like, no. We're putting in turf because we think it's going to decrease injuries. Well, it doesn't look like it's had any effect one way or the other. The reality of football is you need a little luck
to have less injuries. But they haven't had as many guys injured.
Not yet, but we're halfway through the season.
Yeah, we're only halfway through the season.
That's the thing. And what happens? It starts exposing the lack of depth, the lack of homegrown talent that is missing from the roster. And so you can't – and you don't have – top-level guys that overcome the fact that you have 5 or 10 guys on the field at any particular time or 5 or 10 guys playing roles that are above what they should be playing. Because if you have Patrick Mahomes, he can mask that. He can mask that. Or if you have Chris Jones, you know, guys like that, two or three or four superstars, you can overcome weaknesses elsewhere on the roster.
Yeah.
But the Titans have neither. They don't have a lot of depth. And they don't have a lot of stars that overcome the lack of depth. So that's why they are really exposed at this point. They needed everything to go perfectly, which is, again, another reason why they should have been more realistic on how they couched expectations for this season.
No, you're right. And but again, that's a conversation I think, you know, we can continue to have as far as, you know, tapering the expectation. Because on the pregame show yesterday, Jared, Chris and I, we talked about, you know, a little bit about the expectations of the team. And maybe they shouldn't have said this or they should have said that. The fact remains is that the Tennessee Titans, whether, you know, the message was what they put out, or the message was, hey, listen, you know, it's going to take some time. This wasn't a good team from top to bottom. They were more so top-heavy. And even the top-heavy guys, it was still thin. This was a team that once, if you opened up the book and really looked at them, they were not a good team. And they were not a good team. Why? Because they have no depth. You know, so.
Of homegrown
draft
picks that make up the basis of your team. The biggest misconception continues to be, well, they spent all this money.
Yeah.
When you spend big money in free agency in the NFL, it is a sign that you don't have already homegrown talent that you are re-signing and re-upping. That is a problem. And those guys tend to be older, overpaid, sometimes an injury history. And that's what you get. And so that, again, comes back to the fundamental problem that they've had. I just think in our world, it's so easy to say, well, if you spend a lot of money, you should be good. But that's not – everybody's got the same amount of money to spend, generally speaking, in the game. There is a salary cap. It's just who are you giving the money to? Are you giving it to guys that you drafted and are then re-upping for a second contracts? Or are you going outside to try to mask and plug holes? That's a good thing to do if it's two or three guys. But they spent a lot of money on a lot of guys because they had a lot of holes.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and that has the expectation thing going. That's why they needed to have their message buttoned down and ready to go from the start, which they did not.
Well, whether they had that message buttoned down or not, I think Titans fans, I'm not sure they would have been patient because, football fans are not patient. They're just not. I mean, I played the game. I'm a fan of the game, and I'm not patient with it, you know, in a sense. Even, and I know that it takes time for teams, especially a team like the Tennessee Titans, where they're at. It's going to take a minute to rebuild this team. They can circumvent that, but the only way you circumvent that or speed up the process is what? Get you a quarterback. If you land a quarterback, then you're
that
good.
That speeds things up.
That speeds things up.
So what did you think of Drake May? Do you think he's special and will mask? Because we looked at the other picks that they made. Look at the lineup they put out there yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't see any other bright spots on their roster of young talent. I thought May battled. Mm-hmm. Showed some pretty good traits, but he's going to need some help. I don't know that he's Mr. Everything for them, but listen, he could be good, right?
I think he's, at this point, he's Will Levis last year. That's what he is.
Really? Okay.
He's Will Levis last year. He's going to make a lot of mistakes, but then he's going to do those things, too, that gives you hope. Like, man, he could be the guy. Like yesterday, he threw about two or three interception-worthy throws. Two of them was intercepted. Well, he threw four of them. Two was intercepted. Two wasn't. But then he makes the heroic, you know, touchdown pass or the runs. He rushed over 100 yards. So he's giving you a little taste of, okay, this can be the guy. This is the same thing we said about Will Levis last year. Man, look at, yes, he threw the interceptions. I get that. But look at what he did against Atlanta. Look at what he did against Pittsburgh to bring him back. Look at what he did against Miami in the second half. Those were teasers. So I don't know if Drake May is a guy or not. He's teasing them with some of the things that he's doing, but he still has a long way to go.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, as I arrived here at Bridgestone Arena this morning, I sat down in the downstairs media room. Robbie Stanley joined me.
And by the way, is there a pep rally for the Vols today? In the building somewhere?
Robbie's wearing his Vols gear. Is somebody else wearing his Vols gear?
No, but Robbie looked like he was going to something UT-related. Like, he's full on art. Is this some, like, UT show your orange day or something? I'm just wondering, because Robbie, he was decked out, man. Like, he was.
He is a proud Vols fan.
Not just a full-on orange shirt, but the hat and the shirt.
Yes.
Like, he stood out.
I walked out into the bowl for the morning skate. The first person I saw from 300 feet away was Robbie because it was so bright.
You know what? Okay.
He was serious.
There are some things a grown man shouldn't do. There are some things a grown man shouldn't do. Like some people say a grown man shouldn't wear jerseys. It is what it is, okay, whether you wear it or not. Wearing it to a game is cool, but wearing it out, like, nah, if you're a grown person, don't do it. That's another thing a grown man shouldn't do with kids is wear, it's basically put on a fit of your team, the hat and the shirt or the hat and the jersey and then some orange shoes. That's a no-no. I don't know if Robbie had on orange shoes.
I don't think he had orange shoes.
Okay. I did not see orange shoes.
But that is a no. That's a big no-no. Robbie, you got kids and a wife. That's a big no-no, man.
Orange
but you
personally.
Know what? I think Robbie was very comfortable.
We don't fandom shame
in his own
here.
Shoes.
No, we're not going to shame
him. Even though they were
Robbie.
Not orange shoes, he was comfortable in his own shoes. He didn't care. Like he was like, I'm wearing this. I don't care what y'all think.
No, but I just
orange is not my color. But my larger point is that Robbie told me something this morning that had me so excited. I may have done a little jig in the press room. I may have called my dad and said, "Are you sitting down? I have some news to share with you." And I will share that with you next, and we'll relate it to the Tennessee Titans. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Black Rabbit. Black Rabbit is a great spot to enjoy some Nashville vibes with craft cocktails, delicious food, and live music just steps from iconic venues. It's perfect for a night out. Snagging a $50 gift card for only $25 is a fantastic way to experience it. Get yours now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you at Bridgestone Arena. So I didn't mean for my setup to turn into us poo-pooing Robbie's fashion choices today. But
I think when you come in like that, you want people talking about you.
Oh, yeah. You know.
I would love to hear from Robbie. I meant to say something. I only saw him from a distance today. It was funny, but I wanted to say something like, what is going on?
You should have shouted from across the bowl, hey, Robbie! But anyway, so I got here early. Robbie arrived shortly thereafter. We were having a conversation, and then just in the middle of the conversation, he let something slip He just threw it in there. Something that was very important to me that I had not yet heard. He told me that the Saints fired Dennis Allen. And let me tell you, as a Saints fan, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. I did a jig in the press room downstairs. I called my father, who's at work. I texted him first to make sure that he could talk. He called me and I said, "Dad, are you sitting down? Because I have some fabulous news." And he said, "The Saints fired Dennis Allen." And I said, "Yes." And he said, and I quote, "Hot diggity." So I don't begrudge. I said this last week. I do not begrudge Titans fans who might be upset by the outcome of yesterday's game because you want the Titans to lose, so they have no other choice but to make drastic changes. When I saw that the Saints lost to the Panthers yesterday, a team they blew out in week one when things were rosy, lest we forget the Saints started 2-0 before losing seven consecutive games.
Including just an absolute destruction of the Cowboys,
yes,
which had everybody excited.
In Dallas, I too was excited. But when I saw they lost to the Panthers yesterday, I was hopeful that it could be the end of the line for Dennis Allen, and indeed it was. So I don't begrudge Titans fans for feeling upset if you do feel upset about the Titans winning yesterday. But it did, Willie, we talked about this a little bit downstairs before I came up here to set up the show. You know, if you are a Titans fan, things look bleak right now. It could be worse. The Saints, in my opinion, and I am biased, are the most hopeless team in the NFL because their salary cap, yes, their salary cap has been mangled by all of these restructures that they've been doing for years to try to stay competitive. They're God knows how many millions of dollars over the cap, and this is not something that's going to be able, like the Saints will not be able to do a full-scale rebuild in 1 year. This is going to take years for them to dig out of. So I am prepared for the Saints to be irrelevant in the NFL for the next few years as they attempt to dig themselves out of the salary cap hole that they made for themselves as they tried to stay competitive, you know, during the end of the Drew Brees era and you know, right after that. But at least if you're a Titans fan, if the Titans were to undergo a rebuild, it shouldn't be anywhere near as difficult. And I mean, I see that as a sign for optimism if you're a Tennessee Titans fan.
Well, both teams are behind the eight ball. There's no question. But read the stat that you read to me earlier today, because I was aware of this. It illustrates what the Saints have tried to do over the last few years. Since the really good Drew Brees teams, year in and year out, which ended, how many years has it been since Drew Brees quarterback then?
Three, 4 years, because they went from Drew Brees to Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton, and now they've got Derek Carr.
So I think just like when the Titans window closed with the Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Mike Vrabel era, you know it's going to be a big question mark. When Drew Brees, who played well into his late 30s, did he get 40? Was he 40 when he retired? He was close,
That's
right?
That's a good question.
And he had a lot of years where you're like, well, is this the year that Drew Brees slows down? He always gave them a chance. We were just talking about how a great quarterback.
He retired at 42.
A great quarterback can overcome a lot of shortcomings on a roster.
Yes.
And in the meantime, the Saints, they mortgaged the credit card or whatever you want to. They kept paying the minimum and kicking, reworking salaries, pushing it back. And they knew. Mickey Loomis is their general manager. Is he still the general manager now?
Yes.
He knew that this day would come. But I think when Drew Brees finally did step aside, that is where they continued doing what they had been doing, which you probably should do when you have Drew Brees, right? Stay in the window as long as you can. You've got Drew Brees. But when they went to Jameis Winston and then Derek Carr, I think they were trying to maintain. They saw, kind of like the Titans, a winnable division. The NFC South is not a powerhouse. And they kept kicking the can down the road, the credit card bill.
Yes.
It does come due at some point. I thought this would happen earlier than it did, honestly.
I did too.
But they've been sort of mediocre. They look good on occasion, but they haven't been a really good team since Drew Brees, right?
Correct. And Bill Barnwell on October 21st tweeted, the Saints are $81 million
81.
Over next year's cap. And this was before they re-signed Alvin Kamara recently. So it's going to become even harder to move off of that.
Don't you think you could argue that Kamara has his best days behind him?
Absolutely.
Right?
Most of the Saints' best players have their best days behind them.
And so where are they going? It does show you. This is, again, against the philosophies of Professor Stillman in the afternoon, right, who continues to say that the cap really doesn't really matter. You figure it out. But this is an example of you do get into jail eventually. They are an extreme example of reworking contracts, keep going, and don't worry about what happens down the road. It does hit you. And this is where I think the Titans have been smarter to not roll up a huge credit card bill. They don't have a lot of dead money. They did pay off, for better or worse, the contracts of Tannehill, Henry, Byard. They're not absorbing a ton of dead money for having those guys as veterans. Now, what I want to know, and I'm not a capologist here, but all of the money they spent in free agency last year, can they get out of a lot of that when the time comes? Because that day is going to come for some of these guys that are playing right now. You're probably not going to want in 3 or 4 years.
By the way,
right?
You said the Saints are in salary cap jail. That's putting it lightly. They are in salary cap Arkham Asylum, like where they put the Joker. Like that's how bad it is. But I'm just saying that Titans fans, it's been rough. Don't get me wrong. And you're wondering about the future and how bright it could be. I'm telling you, as a fan of a team that fired its coach today, and don't get me wrong, I'm happy about it. I am happy that the Saints fired Dennis Allen today. But although Dennis Allen historically is like one of the worst head coaches in NFL history in terms of like his winning percentage over a minimum amount of games, not just with the Saints, but in general, like I'm not sure how many coaches could have gotten more out of the group that the Saints have currently than Dennis Allen. And maybe it's a good, if he's collateral damage, I'll take it.
And I don't know enough about him.
It could always be worse.
But one of the, when you and I were talking about this earlier in the show, I was saying, okay, I don't know enough about Dennis Allen, know if he's a good coach, not a good coach. But I look at what he was handed, and I ask myself, what did he really have a shot to win? What was best case? Just like this Titans team.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about this Titans team, could they have, if everything came together and Levis played well early in the season, could they have scratched out 8, maybe even 9 wins? Yeah, that could have happened if everything goes right. But it's not as likely. That's one avenue. But there's a lot of different ways your season can go based on injuries, how your quarterback plays, and all of that. And the deck was kind of stacked against this Titans team. The ceiling wasn't that high. And obviously it can go really bad as it's gone. And the Saints, I think, have been in the same boat. But They're further away than the Titans, I think. Like, who's their next quarterback
right.
going to be? They don't know.
Who knows? And by the way, Dennis Allen's winning percentage, .329, which is the third worst in NFL history with a minimum of 75 games as a head coach. And so he is not a good coach. But I don't think even an average coach could have squeezed more out of that Saints roster. My larger point is that although things appear bleak for the Titans, it appears that they have more avenues, more alleys to go down to try to fix this right now than the Saints do, which is, I mean, the Saints are, I'm going to just be put it bluntly, the Saints are screwed.
It might get worse before it gets better.
Absolutely.
For the Titans, you're hoping that you're bottoming out, but for the Titans, what needs to happen for them to be good? Unfortunately, I didn't see anything yesterday that changed my outlook of the young players, but they need the young players to start to make some strides. Like Jaquan Jackson, who I saw catch a pass yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, good. But he fumbled twice in returns. Like, they won the game
luckily
yesterday.
Luckily, they got him back, both of them.
Yeah,
they got him both back.
He was fortunate.
The ball bounced their way, is what you're saying.
The ball is not round, by the way.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that Latham and Skoronski played well, but these are the things I'm looking for Sunday after Sunday. Winning a game against a bad team because Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Calvin Ridley, Mason Rudolph, Jeffrey Simmons were just slightly better than the Patriots guys. in the long term doesn't get you anywhere.
615-737-1025. Will Levis was a bit of a surprise scratch for the Tennessee Titans yesterday. We all expected him to play. He did not. We'll get into that and what Brian Callahan had to say after the game yesterday as well as today. And we will do that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.